Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, September 16th. I'm your reader, Erin. The first article on the front page, Key City Creative Unveils Office Space by Jeff Montgomery. For the past 3 years, Key City Creative Center has provided a space where members can collaborate with others and create hands-on projects. Located at 1781 White Street, the nonprofit provides tools, equipment, and other resources to local residents. It has allowed welders, woodworkers, artists, and a variety of other creators to bring their project to life. However, it quickly became apparent that many members were building something even bigger, said Craig Baton, who just wrapped up a lengthy term as chairman of Key City's board. Quote, the Creative Center has become a mini business incubator, which is something no one anticipated, Baton said. People thought it might be more of a hobby haven, basically a gymnasium with tools, but we discovered people were coming in and starting businesses, end quote. Key City leaders believe the nonprofit's newest addition, an office space referred to as BizHub, will help entrepreneurs move one step further in their journey. The remodel area has on the building's second floor features computer workstations, meeting spaces, and other office amenities. It will also give members access to software programs that could otherwise be prohibitively expensive. Baton believes this hub will introduce a new dynamic to Key City Creative, where members often happen upon business opportunities as they labor in the center's workspace. Baton is a prime example of this phenomenon. In 2018, Baton and his wife opened Upcycle Dubuque, a business that sells furniture, decor, and a variety of other items made from recaptured materials. Upcycle Dubuque got its start within the Key City Creative Center, Baton said. BizHub will now allow members to tackle the other aspects of entrepreneurship, such as designing products or crafting a business plan within the same facility. Quote, it's kind of closes the loop, end quote, Baton said. The introduction of BizHub comes amid a period of transition at Key City Creative Center. Tim Hitzler founded the workspace in 2017 and has long served as the nonprofit's director. He said he is proud of the way Key City has evolved, noting that membership has, quote, doubled every year, end quote, and now sits at 85 people. Quote, it has been neat to see the changes that occurred here, he said. That is a tribute to past and present members. They have made it what it is, end quote. Hitzler has such faith in Key City members that he is passing his director duties to a pair of them. Eric Ether and Brian Graham will officially take over as co-directors in October, but are already handling many of the duties. Ether believes Key City Creative Center serves a vital purpose in a changing world. Quote, so much is happening virtually now, he said. I think there is a huge need in our world for hands-on creativity, end quote. Hitzler will continue to have a presence at the Creative Center. In addition to being a member, he also owns the building. He said he thinks the new directors are the right fit to propel Key City forward. Quote, I am excited about where we will be 3 years from now, end quote, he said. The new business hub was made possible by a multi-year partnership and a sizable financial contribution from DuPaco Community Credit Union. The credit union's integral role is reflected in the official name for the new space, formerly dubbed BizHub, powered by DuPaco. A $15,000 investment from the credit union allowed Key City to build out the new space and fill it with necessary equipment. Michelle Bucor, DuPaco's partnership development supervisor, believes supporting organizations such as Key City is critical. Quote, these places foster creativity and innovation, she said. A lot of people develop their interest in entrepreneurship from them, end quote. Key City Board Chairman Jeff DeCicco said multiple members already are using the BizHub, which officially opened last week. He believes the space can provide the missing pieces that could propel a business concept forward. Quote, the vision is to create an environment where people can use the computers to do something like graphic design or to use a software program they cannot afford on their own, he said. These things can help them start their businesses, end quote. DeCicco, who became became chairman earlier this month, believes the presence of the new co-directors is also having a tangible impact on the Creative Center. Either and Graham have spearheaded efforts to reorganize the facility and create additional space, a task which has taken on new importance as Key City steadily builds its membership base. The massive undertaking has resulted in a cleaner look and more efficient layout. Quote, now that we are organized, it has freed up a lot of space, end quote, DeSico said. Quote, people who have been here in a few months will be surprised by how it looks. Our next article, brothers arrested in an ambush shooting. Deontay J.D. Massey Beavers and Marcus L.D. Massey Phillips face charges related to August 4th incident, the Telegraph Herald. Police have arrested two brothers in connection with an ambush in which two vehicles boxed in a third before shooting at it. Deontay J.D. Massey Beavers, 24, of 534 West Locust Street, was arrested at 7:08 p.m. Friday at the Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on warrants charging intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, reckless use of a firearm with damage, and carrying weapons. Marcus L.D. Massey Phillips, 26, of 444 Angela Street, number 21, was arrested at 11:48 a.m. Monday in the area of East 16th Street and Central Avenue on warrants charging intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, control of a firearm by a felon, and reckless use of a firearm. Massey Beavers and Massey Phillips are brothers. Court documents state that the charges stem from a shooting at about 10:10 p.m. August 4th in the 2200 block of Washington Street. Jafarce J. Jackson, 24, of 1202 White Street, number 3, was arrested Friday in connection with the shooting. Court documents state that police responded at 10:08 p.m. to the 2200 block of Washington after hearing multiple shots fired in the area. Police reported recovering three shell casings at the scene of the shooting and finding vehicle parts near a street sign that had been struck on the block. A review of traffic camera footage showed that two vehicles, including a large sport utility vehicle, boxed in a third vehicle and that had been traveling north in the 2200 block of Washington. Quote, the front passenger door of the SUV opens and a subject from the SUV fires multiple rounds at the boxed-in vehicle, end quote, state the court documents, which indicate that Jackson was the shooter. Quote, that vehicle maneuvers around the SUV, strikes a street sign, and flees the area, end quote. Documents state that police later found it unoccupied in the 3200 block of Getty Terrace, quote, with multiple bullet holes and impacts, end quote. Court documents state that prior to the shooting, Jackson and Massey Phillips traveled to Comiskey Park, where they met with Massey Beavers and allegedly coordinated the ambush. Lieutenant Ted McClemon said police are continuing to investigate the incident and that additional charges are possible. McClemon and police do not believe there were any injuries in the shooting. Massey Beavers recently pleaded not guilty to charges related to a different shooting on July 22nd. Massey Beavers is charged in that case in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, reckless use of a firearm causing bodily injury, and control of a firearm by a domestic abuse offender. Massey Beavers and Jackson are accused of a drive-by shooting of Denzel M. Hayes, 26 of 2054 Jackson Street, number 1, in the 400 block of West Locust Street on July 22nd. Documents state that Hayes apparently was shot in retaliation for a shooting on June 12th that wounded Massey Phillips. That shooting occurred at a party hosted by LaShawn M. Brown, 29, of 2054 Jackson Street, number 1, who is Hayes' brother. In connection with the July 22nd shooting, Jackson faces charges of intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, reckless use of a firearm causing bodily injury, and carrying a concealed dangerous weapon. The last front page article, officials clarify absentee voting details. With the election less than 50 days away, area auditors and clerks work to clear up any confusion, by Kaylee Reese. In part due to COVID-19 concerns, election officials have seen a bump in absentee ballot requests throughout the year. With less than 50 days to go before the November 3rd presidential election, tri-state county officials shared what information absentee voters need to know before voting by mail. Iowa. Last week, absentee ballot request forms were mailed to all active Iowa voters from the office of Iowa Security Secretary of State Paul P. so they could request a ballot if they haven't already. Quote, the county is not sending anything out, end quote, Dubuque County Auditor Denise Dolan said. Quote, we knew they were going to get them from plenty of other places, end quote. Voters might have received other absentee ballots from Iowa Democrats, Iowa Republicans, or other third parties, she said. Those groups don't have county data on who has already requested ballots and may send repeat forms. Voters can track their absentee ballots on the Dubuque County Elections or PATE's website by searching the exact name on one's voter registration. Voters only have to request and send back one absentee form. Forms ask Iowa voters for their name, birthday, current address, election type, and signature. They also request either a driver's license number, non-operator ID number, or a PIN number on voter ID cards. Dolan said Dubuque County officials can begin mailing ballots October 5th. Ballots cannot be mailed after 5 p.m. October 24th, so all requests must be received before then. Typically, she said, the county receives 22,000 ballot requests. This year, county officials are anticipating closer to 33,000. Quote, if they want to vote early, they should go ahead and get that request form in, end quote, Dolan said. Wisconsin. All Wisconsin municipal clerks were supposed to begin mailing requested absentee ballots by Thursday, but a state lawsuit halted the process. The Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled Monday that Green Party presidential candidate Howie Hawkins will not be on the November ballots in the state. Municipal clerks had been told to stop mailing ballots until the matter was settled in case ballots had to be reprinted with Hawkins' ticket. Quote, we do have people calling about them, but we're told by the Elections Commission we cannot mail them until the litigation is over, Grant County Clerk Linda Gebhard said. At around 6 Monday night, we got the call that the litigation was over, so we're in delay right now, end quote. The legal matter paused ballot printing, Gabbard said, but the county hopes to start mailing them as soon as possible. Quote, we'll try our best, end quote, she said. According to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Grant County had 4,654 absentee ballot requests as of Tuesday. Statewide, totals are just over 1 million. Though Thursday is the deadline for clerks to mail out absentee ballots, residents can continue to request ballots online or request ballots until October 29th. However, the Wisconsin Elections Commission website warns that October 29 is often too late to request a ballot in order to have it returned to municipal clerks by Election Day. Gabbard said the clerk's office also has received calls regarding confusion about election mailers, many of which are sent by third-party interest groups without correct ballot information. Wisconsin absentee ballots require a driver's license and proof of residency. The Wisconsin Elections Commission also sent out a mailer around Labor Day meant to remind residents about all voting options, which inadvertently has prompted more questions. Quote, it's causing a lot of confusion because people see that and think, oh, I must not be registered to vote, but that's not necessarily true, end quote, Gabbard said. The best way to clarify questions regarding voter registration and absentee ballots is to directly contact municipal clerks, she added. Illinois. Joe Davies County Clerk Angela Kaiser said the county will begin sending out ballots to those who have requested an absentee ballot on September 24th. Requests must include a voter's name, home address, and address where the ballot should be sent. Like Wisconsin, all requests to vote by mail must be received by county clerks before October 29th. People can either mail in absentee ballots or bring them to the clerk's office, Kaiser said. However, she added that they don't want more people in the clerk's office than needed due to COVID-19. So far, she said, the county has had over 2,700 applications to vote by mail, many more than the amount it would usually have at this time. Quote, if they can vote in person, we're encouraging that, Kaiser said. But if they can't, they should do it by mail, end quote. Moving to the Dubuque and Tri-State section, casinos report steep revenue declines. Diamond Joe and Q Casinos collectively produced about $9.3 million in gambling revenue last month, by Jeff Montgomery. Dubuque Casino saw a sharp decline in gambling revenue last month, providing further evidence that the market is facing major challenges as it attempts to navigate the realities of COVID-19. Diamond Joe and Q Casinos collectively produced about $9.3 million in gambling revenue last month, a decline of nearly 13% compared to August 2019. While Diamond Joe earned the majority of the market share, the casino also experienced steeper year-over-year declines. The property reported $5.18 million in gaming revenue last month, a decrease of 16% compared to the same period last year. Q Casino saw revenues decline 7.8% to about $4.1 million last month. Q Casino CEO Jesus Velez discussed the latest financials Tuesday during a meeting of the Dubuque Racing Association Board of Directors. The DRA is the nonprofit license holder for both Dubuque casinos. Velez acknowledged that it is difficult to forecast what lies ahead. Quote, "We just don't know where this industry is going to go," he said. "We're all optimistic that it will get better by the day and by the month, but that is an uncertainty," end quote. Sports betting served as a bright spot for each casino. Major professional sports leagues consumed action late this summer after multi-month shutdowns, leading to a major increase in sports wagers. FanDuel Sportsbook, located within Diamond Joe, saw sports wagers increase from $267,000 in July to $743,000 last month. Bettors wagered $2.23 million at Q Sportsbook in August, more than double the $1.7 million wagered in July. Quote, "We are getting a lot of visitations and a lot of action here," end quote, Avilés said. Both Dubuque casinos reopened June 1 after being shuttered for more than 2 months due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Q General Manager Brian Rakestraw noted that the industry struggle are not exclusive to Dubuque. The Iowa gambling market was down more than 7% last month, while Illinois saw revenues fall by 25% and Wisconsin observed a 12% decline. The pandemic has also impacted business at Houlihan's and the Hilton Garden Inn, both of which are owned by Q Casino. The combined struggles in the gambling, hospitality, and restaurant industries have compelled Q leaders to take a close look at their costs. Quote, "One of our main goals as we move into the winter months is to really manage our bottom line and watch our expenses," end quote, Rakestraw told the DRA board. Financial uncertainty already has impacted nonprofits that rely on an annual DRA grants. In April, the DRA board voted to push back awarding its grants, which typically are announced in May. At the time, board chairman Gary Dolphin emphasized that the grant program was just being delayed rather than being eliminated altogether. However, a definitive plan for grant allocations has not materialized in the months since. In an email to the Telegraph Herald, Dolphin indicated that a decision could be reached as early as next month. At that point, the casino will be entering the final quarter of the year and officials will be able to, quote, "see where the casino fits financially," he wrote. "It's my hope that in the fourth quarter we can distribute grant monies," end quote, he wrote. The next article, area businesses welcome RV owners. Wineries and breweries play host to travelers as part of Harvest Host by Annie Mell, Hanover, Illinois. Last year, a group of customers at Fergen DeBuett Vineyard and Winery suggested Vicky Bruno list her business on a website where RV owners pay a subscription to park at wineries and breweries or farms. Bruno kept the idea in the back of her mind, but when she was forced to close her business in Hanover, Illinois for several months during the COVID-19 pandemic, she decided to use the downtime to sign up for Harvest Hosts. Quote, "We started getting phone calls and emails right away," said Bruno, the business co-owner. "We will just commit one or two RVs a weekend. I get like 10 or 15 calls a week. I can't even keep up with the scheduling them," end quote. As more people cancel flights to stem the spread of COVID-19 and look for other ways to travel, many have purchased RVs and taken to the road, and some area businesses have started opening up their properties for travelers in hopes of attracting new businesses. Harvest Host aims to make RV travel accessible by giving people a variety of places to stay and, in turn, helping local businesses. Participants can pay an annual fee to access more than 1,275 sites or purchase a subscription to stay at sites as well as access golf courses. Since signing up for Harvest Host in June, Fergan DeBewitt Vineyard and Winery has had about 50 guests arrive in their RVs, Bruno said. They are able to park at the site, sleep in their RVs overnight, explore the winery, and hang out for the evening. Quote, it's been really cool, she said. They kind of just hang out with us all day. The main purpose is for them to reciprocate. There have been people who have bought a case or two of wine. It has definitely been worth it financially, end quote. Bruno said guests have come from all around Illinois and all over the country to get a break from the city and check out a rural winery. Quote, it's been really cool, she said. Every one of them have been wonderful, end quote. Harvest Host representatives reached out to Stone Cliff Winery in Dubuque this summer, asking if the business would register to become one of its destinations, said Jody Bryson, tasting room manager and event coordinator. Quote, we are excited right away because we love having visitors here, she said. We like to showcase Dubuque, and so far we have had like 7 or 8 people, end quote. Bryson said people come and park their RVs in the parking lot and sit at the winery for lunch, and they often continue to drink wine and stay through dinner as well. Quote, I think it's a good because it brings people to Dubuque and they fall in love with it, she said. I have already had a few people say they will be back, end quote. Officials from Harvest Host did not respond to an email seeking comment for this story. 7 new cases of COVID-19 in Dubuque County. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Tuesday's developments included just 7 additional cases of COVID-19 in Dubuque County were confirmed from 5 p.m. Monday to 5 p.m. Tuesday, pushing the county's total to 2,419. The county recorded 117 new tests in that 24-hour period, so the county's positivity rate was 6% during that span. The county's to-date positivity rate remained at 9% as of 5 p.m. Tuesday. There were 2 additional COVID-19 related deaths reported in the area in the 24-hour period, one in Dubuque County and one in Jackson County. With 375 new confirmed cases and 2,564 tests in the previous 2 weeks, the county's 14-day positivity rate as of 5 p.m. Tuesday was 14.6%. The Telegraph Herald's calculation based on the state's totals continues to exceed the state's reported 14-day positivity rate due to the state's practice of not counting recent confirmed cases until all data is received, such as the date of birth of the testee. This practice drives down the positivity rate even though those cases have been confirmed in a specific county. At 5 p.m. Tuesday, the state reported Dubuque County's 14-day positivity rate as 11.6%. By subtracting the number of related deaths and recovered in Dubuque County from the number of confirmed cases, there were 565 quote-unquote active cases as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, which is a decrease of 17 from 24 hours earlier. 4 more cases were reported in the 24-hour period in Delaware County, 3 more in Clayton County, and 1 each in Jackson and Jones counties. There were 16 people in Dubuque County hospitalized with COVID-19 as of Monday, the most recent state-reported data. Jackson and Jones counties reported 3 hospitalized, Delaware County reported 2, and Clayton County had reported none as of Monday. Statewide, 453 new cases were reported in the 24-hour span ending at 5 p.m. Tuesday, pushing the tally to 75,392. There were 10 additional related deaths, so that toll moved to 1,234. In Wisconsin, Grant County had an increase of 15 cases on Tuesday. Iowa County had 4 additional cases, while Crawford and Lafayette counties each had 2 more. Statewide, 1,348 new cases were reported Tuesday, pushing the total to 91,304. There were 10 additional related deaths, so the state count moved to 1,220. In Illinois, 1,466 new confirmed cases were reported Tuesday, along with 20 additional confirmed deaths. That brings the state's total to 264,210 cases and 8,332 deaths. Joe Davies County reported 3 additional cases Tuesday. News in brief. Police driver fled crash that injured two following a chase through Dubuque. Dubuque police are searching for a man who fled the scene after a vehicle chase through downtown Dubuque that resulted in a crash, injuring two people on Tuesday. The suspect fled on foot after crashing his vehicle into two others in that 1900 block of Jackson Street shortly before 3:30 p.m., Lieutenant Ted McClemon said. Quote, it's still a very active investigation, he said shortly after 5 p.m. We still have multiple officers in the area trying to locate the individual, end quote. McClemon said officers conducted a traffic stop at 3:18 p.m. in the area of the 16th Street and Central Avenue when the driver fled in his vehicle. Officers pursued the driver through downtown and the north end before the suspect crashed into other vehicles. An adult female and a juvenile were in one of the vehicles that was hit. The two were transported to the hospital, though McClemon did not have information on the severity of their injuries. McClemon said officials have not yet confirmed the identity of the individual involved. Dubuque man pleads guilty to attempted burglary and stalking. A Dubuque man who allegedly smashed a window to gain entry into an apartment building, then tried to break into a woman's apartment with a hammer, has pleaded guilty to two charges related to the incident. Anthony D. Berry, 51, of 830 College Street, pleaded guilty to attempted burglary, a Class C felony, and stalking, a Class D felony, on Monday. Berry could face 10 years in prison for attempted burglary and 5 years for stalking. A first-degree burglary charge will be dismissed. Berry was arrested July 10th. Court documents state that a woman called police when she and her daughter woke to Berry slamming on their front door with the claw side of the hammer. He fled before police arrived. A sentencing hearing was set for October 26. Police arrest man in connection with two assaults. Police arrested a man accused of two assaults. Tyrone S. Watson, 44, no permanent address, was arrested at 11:02 p.m. Friday in the 2500 block of Queen Street on charges of domestic assault with strangulation, second degree harassment, fifth degree criminal mischief, and interference with official acts and outstanding warrants. Charging willful injury, assault with injury, fifth-degree criminal mischief, and probation violation. Court documents state that Watson assaulted Denisha N. Moore, 36, of 1293 Bluff Street, No. 1, on Saturday in the area of Queen and Henry Streets. Documents state that Watson assaulted Lorenzo Davis, Jr., 23, of 667 West 3rd Street, on March 15th, breaking Davis's jaw. Police, the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported Cameron T. Knight, 19, no permanent address, was arrested at 12:20 a.m. Tuesday in the area of U.S. 61 and Airport Road on a warrant charging unauthorized use of a credit card. April A. Johnson, 28, of 9860 Katy Cove, and Jesse W. Granson, 35, of Zwingle, Iowa, were arrested around 3:20 p.m. Monday in the area of White and East 6th Streets on warrants charging second-degree theft. Marshawn D. Sullivan, 23, of 414.5 West Locust Street, was arrested at 2 p.m. Friday in the 900 block of Elm Street on charges of first-degree harassment, domestic assault with injury, false imprisonment, and possession of marijuana. Court documents state that Sullivan assaulted Sharonda L. Patton, 25, of the same address. Moving over to the obituaries, Gary Pitts, Piosta, Iowa. Gary Pitts, 76, of Piosta, formerly of New Vienna, Iowa, passed away surrounded by his family on Monday, September 14, 2020, at UW Health University Hospital, Madison, Wisconsin. Visitation will be held 2 to 8 p.m. Thursday, September 17, 2020, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue from 9 to 10 a.m. at Kramer Funeral Home prior to funeral services. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September 18. 2020 at St. Boniface Catholic Church in New Vienna with burial in the church cemetery. Burial will take place after procession past the Pitts family farm. Reverend Anthony Nikita will officiate with Reverend Carl Rise concelebrating. Gary was born September 8, 1944, in New Vienna, Iowa, the son of Paul and Lynetta Rise Pitts. He married Elaine Siebels Pitts on February 23, 1974. He had a passion for farming, taking over the Pitts family farm in 1974. Gary excelled in basketball and baseball for many years. He later enjoyed watching sports, especially his children and grandchildren. Gary also looked forward to his Tuesday golf outings and occasional fishing trips. Survivors include his wife, Elaine, of 46 years, children, Scott, spouse Amy Pitts of Epworth, Amy, spouse Dan O'Connell of Delhi, Kevin, spouse Lori Pitts of New Vienna, Megan, spouse Brian Warner of Delhi, grandchildren Grace, Garrett, Allie, Cambry, Peyton, Olivia, Maya, Gordon, Parker, Briley, Brent, Braylon, siblings Doris, spouse Tony Hell of Edgewood, Phyllis Jean Hormatica of Dubuque, Kay Hughes of Marion, in-laws Jeanette Johnson of Appleton, Wisconsin, Cleo, spouse Mike Rogers of Cascade, Sally Siebels of Monticello, Paul, spouse Linda Siebels of Monticello, and Beverly, spouse Jim Irvin of Monticello. He was preceded in death by his parents-in-law, Harvey and Louise Siebels, in-laws David Hughes, Leroy Johnson, David Siebels, a niece, Julie Harmonica, and nephew, Devin Siebels. The family would like to thank the first responders of Centralia Peosta, the ER department at Mercy One in Dubuque, and the UW staff for all their compassionate care. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.cramerfuneral.com. Don Dobson, Peosta, Iowa. Don Dobson, 64, of Peosta, died Monday, September 14, 2020, at her home. The funeral mass for Don will be Thursday, September 17, 2020, at 1:30 p.m. at Holy Ghost Church, Holy Spirit Parish, 2921 Central Ave, Dubuque, with Reverend Father Stephen Garner as the celebrant. The mass will be live-streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Homes Facebook page and will also be available to view later at www.haskfcares.com. Due to the current Dubuque City Ordinance, masks are required at the Mass. Please respect our current social distancing requirements. If you are not feeling well or unable to attend, we encourage you to visit www.haskfhcares.com to send a message to Don's family. Don was born June 16, 1956 in Dubuque, the daughter of Robert and Irene Thornton Rose. On June 14, 1975, she married Michael Dobson in Dubuque. Don worked in the anesthesia department of Mercy until she was unable to work anymore. She was a member of Holy Ghost Church for many years. Don loved making glass bead bracelets, doing puzzles, gambling, being on her computer, shopping, and eating good food. Survivors include her husband, Mike of Peosta, two sons, Jason Dobson of Dubuque and Eric Dobson of Georgia, two sisters, Tara Palista of West Virginia and Robin, spouse Don Redman of Lowmore, Iowa, five grandchildren, and Elliot, Noah, Brady, Carson, and Owen, many nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents and two sisters, Ardias Lampy and Pam Rose. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Services is in care of the arrangements. Condolences can be sent to the family by visiting Don's obituary at www.haskfhcares.com. Ronald C. Rotowski, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Ronald C. Rotowski, 71, of Hazel Green, died September 13, 2020. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until the time of service at the church. Mass of Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, September 22, 2020, at St. Augustine University Parish, Platteville, Wisconsin. Burial will be in Nativity BVM Cemetery, Menominee, Illinois. The Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque, Illinois, is serving the family. Mary G. Mullen. Mary Bjorkamp Mullen was born on June 19th in Sylvia Switch, Iowa, the sixth child of Gert Bjorkamp and Jack Bjorkamp, and passed away on September 15th, 2020, surrounded by her family. The Mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September 18th, 2020, at Church of the Nativity with Reverend Father Andy Upa as the celebrant. Due to the current pandemic, Mass is only for immediate family and extended family. Burial will be in Mount Olivet Cemetery in Key West. The Mass will be live streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page and will also be available to view later at www.hskfhcares.com. Please respect our current social distancing requirements. In accordance with the current Dubuque City Ordinance, masks are required at Mass. If you are not feeling well or unable to attend, we encourage you to visit our website to send a message to Mary's family. Mary had a love for many things. We often joked that during a car ride, walk, or conversation, the word beautiful would be used in countless ways. She also loved the dozens of young people that she worked with at Kmart over the years and likely had a positive impact on their lives. Mary also spent a number of years at both Kluwer Manufacturing and the Dubuque Pack. She made the world beautiful with not only her spirit, but her art, including nature scenes and rocks that she painted. Mary loved walking. A map of Dubuque hung in the home they built in Glen Oak with all the streets highlighted in yellow. Over the years, her walking shoes visited each one of them. For most of their lives, Mary and Abe loved spending time at Freddy's Beach, Mississippi River, and Leisure Lake, and enjoyed a number of friends in each of these places. Dad and friends built a cottage at the lake in the 60s, close to a number of Mom's Buell Camp brothers and sisters. These places remain for our family and friends at the center of our fondest childhood memories. Mary had a way of lending a compliment or letting you know that she loved you and taught us all the value of caring for each other. Even in her last days, Mary took the time to let us all know how much she loved us. Mary loved. Mary is survived by her two daughters, Sandy, spouse Dick Butler, and Lynn, spouse Ralph Schmidt, two twin sons, Mike, spouse Donna Mullen, and Mark, spouse Carrie Mullen, her grandchildren, Andy, spouse Shelley Butler, Brian, spouse Michelle Butler, Jeff, spouse Kristen Schmidt, Jared, spouse Lindsay Lavoui Schmidt, Tim, spouse Allie Homan Schmidt, Chris, spouse Gina Mullen, Elena, spouse Hiringshek Mullen, Riley Mullen, Ryan Mullen, Kelsey Murphy, and Zach Murphy. Her great-grandchildren, AJ, Brian, spouse Michelle Butler, Peyton, Ben, and Abby Butler, Rory and Keegan Schmidt, and one on the way. She was preceded in death by her husband, John, on December 26, 2013, her parents, three brothers, and two sisters. Our family will forever be in the debt to Carrie and Mark for making their home hers during the last several weeks. This act of caring provided Mom with the opportunity to pass with dignity and be constantly surrounded by loved ones. In lieu of flowers, please direct memorial contributions to Hospice of Dubuque. Hoffman Schneider and Funeral and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service is in the care of the arrangements. Dwight W. Rodas, Edgewood, Iowa. Dwight Wayne Rodas, 73, of Edgewood, died Sunday, September 13, 2020, at Mercy One Medical Center, Elkader, Iowa. Visitation will be held Friday, September 18, 2020, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Leonard Guru Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Elkader. Public graveside service with military honors will be held Saturday, September 19, at 11 a.m. at Union Cemetery, Littleport. Thomas W. Downing, Savannah, Illinois. Thomas W. Downing, 40, of Savannah, died tragically in an automobile accident Sunday, September 6, 2020, near Thompson, Illinois. A memorial gathering was held Tuesday, September 15, 2020, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah. Family and friends are invited to share in Tom's life at lawjonesfuneralhome.com. Thomas Dolan, New Albion, Iowa. Thomas Tom Dolan, 73, of New Albion, formerly of Waterloo, died September 14, 2020. Friends may call from 9:30 a.m. until time of services on Thursday at the church. Funeral services will be held Thursday, September 17th at 11 a.m. at St. Joseph Catholic Church in New Albion. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Thomas F. LeGrand. Thomas F. LeGrand, 57, of Dubuque, died September 12, 2020. No public visitation or service will be held. A private gathering for immediate family will be held at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Patty J. Lindecker. Patty J. Lindecker, 58, of Dubuque, died September 14, 2020. Private family services will be held. Arrangements are pending at the Eaglehoff, Seeger, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 Kennedy Road. And then we also have a section for just funeral services. Most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Contact specific locations for more information. Daniel G. Atkinson, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, September 19th, Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Lancaster. Celebration of life following visitation, Zippy's Brass Rail, Lancaster. Dean E. Bennett, Racine, Wisconsin. Visitation 10 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, September 19th, Hood and Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Shane E. Brem, Dubuque. Services 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 17th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Visitation 3 to 7 p.m. today at the funeral home. Shirley F. Brissette, Cibola, Iowa. Services 2 p.m. Friday, September 18th, Law Jones Funeral Home, Savannah, Illinois. Visitation 1 to 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Samantha Jo Dickens, Sutcliffe, Iowa, formerly of Monona and Marquette, Iowa. Celebration of life, 3 p.m. today, Living Faith United Methodist Parish, Girard, Iowa. Visitation 1 to 3 p.m. Wednesday at the church. Anthony Eldrenkamp, Savannah, Illinois. Celebration of life, 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, September 18th, Law Jones Funeral Home, Savannah. Agnes M. Gnade, Andrew, Iowa. Celebration of life, 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday, September 17th, Timber Center, Maquita, Iowa. Lawrence F. Cruz, Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 19th, St. Francis Xavier, Basilia, Dyersville, Iowa. Jeanette Stamier, West Union, Iowa. Services 11 a.m. Friday, September 18th, St. Luke Catholic Church, St. Lucas, Iowa. Visitation after 9 a.m. Friday at the church. Mark D. Topf, Dubuque. Services 10:30 a.m. today, Church of the Resurrection. Elizabeth N. Tyson, Platteville, Wisconsin. Services 11 a.m. today, St. Mary's Catholic Church, Platteville. Visitation 9:30 a.m. until the time of the service at the church. Moving to sports, we have boys prep golf. Casey Powers rams to third at MVC Divisional. Senior sits just ahead of Hempstead, which had a strong round from sophomore Will Sigworth by Steve Ortman. The course may have been playing tough, but Tim Casey and Dubuque Senior battled through to stay in the title contention. Casey led the Rams with an 84 in sixth place, helping Senior finish third overall with a 351 after the first round of the Mississippi Valley Conference Valley Divisional meet on Tuesday at Finkenbein Golf Course in Iowa City. Quote, "I thought it was a tough day and the course was playing tough," the Rams coach Tim Felderman said. "The greens were really playing fast. Overall, the kids are not too excited about how they played, but it's still nice to finish third out of the seven teams," end quote. Cedar Rapids' Kennedy leads the pack with a 335, with Cedar Rapids' Xavier just a stroke behind. Following Senior, Dubuque Hempstead rests in fourth place with a 363 and was led by sophomore Will Sigworth, shooting an 83 to place fifth. Quote, "I'm really happy for Will shooting an 83 on a tough day," end quote, Hempstead coach Chad Parkins said. Quote, "To be in fifth in this division, that's really good. Sitting in fourth as a team, we'll take that for now. We were hoping to shoot a little better than we did, but we had some younger guys play pretty well," end quote. Casey led a strong Rams effort that saw three players since inside the top 10, as Nate Obink finished 9th and Adrian Obermuller was 10th, both scoring 86s. Brady Davis rounded out Senior score in 28th with a 95. Quote, "He's been playing well," Felderman said of Casey. "He had our best score today, and he's been very consistent for us. He didn't play the greatest today, but he still got sixth. That puts him in a pretty good shape for round two," end quote. Behind Sigworth, Hempstead's Nate Kiesbauer came in 12th place with an 87. Freshman Cole Ramler fired a 90 to sit in 16th place, and Nolan Schroeder capped the Mustangs' score in 32nd with a 103. Dubuque, Waller, and Western Dubuque played the first round of the Mississippi Divisional in Cedar Falls on Monday. The final divisional rounds will both be held on Monday, September 28th, with the Mississippi at Thunder Hills Country Club in Peosta and the Valley at the Meadows in Asbury. Quote, it will be nice to stay in Dubuque and especially not have to leave so here early and hit the road, Felderman said. It will be nice to sleep in a little bit and be refreshed and ready to play. In college football, Big Ten football on hold until questions answered. School leaders are still concerned about testing and contact tracing procedures and long-term health effects. By Ralph D. Russo of the Associated Press. The University of Wisconsin chancellor said Tuesday that Big Ten football will remain on hold until there are answers to questions about COVID-19 testing and tracing, along with possible long-term heart issues related to the coronavirus. Chancellor Rebecca Blank said once the Big Ten university leaders have their concerns addressed, quote, we will try to plan a delayed season, end quote. A month after postponing games, conference leaders are considering playing a fall season after all. There were weekend meetings on a plan to begin play as soon as mid-October. Blank, appearing at a congressional hearing on compensation for college athletes, was asked by Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, about the Big Ten's decision last month and whether the conference might reverse course. Quote, there were several main reasons for that, Blank said. One was that we were uncertain we could do the level of testing and contact tracing that we needed to keep athletes safe. Secondly, there was this growing evidence about heart-related myocarditis that have evidence and was uncertain and wasn't clear that it means, and we wanted to know more. There were a few other minor reasons, end quote. She would not predict which way a vote would to return to play would go. Quote, decisions within the Big Ten are largely majority-based decisions, but I'll be honest, we almost always decide everything by consensus. We very rarely take votes, end quote, Blank said. A court filing earlier this month disclosed that Big Ten presidents and chancellors voted 11-3 in favor of postponing all fall sports. Iowa, Nebraska, and Ohio State voted against the move. When the next decision comes from the Big Ten was unclear, though KETV in Omaha posted video Tuesday of University of Nebraska President Ted Carter saying, quote, we're getting ready to announce the Huskers in Big Ten football tonight, end quote, before he spoke at an unrelated news conference. Carter later told KLKN in Lincoln that the statement was taken out of context. Quote, when there is any news to share or confirm regarding any Big Ten board decision, it will be announced by the Big Ten, end quote, University of Nebraska spokeswoman Deb Fideliu said. And just because I know, the Big Ten has decided to play again, and I'm sure we'll be reading about it tomorrow. The next article, Perfect Timing, Mustangs Mirror Reaches Milestone at Clutch Moment, by Brendan West. Corinne Mirror wasn't expecting to reach a milestone on Tuesday night, but her last kill of the evening couldn't have come at a better time for the Dubuque Hempstead volleyball team. Mirror scored the 24th kill of the night on match point to lift her Iowa Class 5A No. 9 Mustangs to a thrilling 5-set victory over Western Dubuque in Moody Gymnasium, 15-25, 25-22, 25-10, 24-26, and 15-13. That final swing also served as Meyer's 1,000th career kill in a Hempstead uniform, making another hard-fought victory over the Bobcats extra special. Quote, I couldn't have done it, obviously, without my teammates, end quote, said Meyer, who had also a match-high 52 swings. Quote, we played tough today. We knew Western Dubuque was going to be tough. I think we showed how good we truly are, end quote. A starter since her freshman season, Maynard, now a senior, has been at the center for the Mustangs offense throughout her career. She was second on Hempstead's in skill and kills her freshman and sophomore season and took over the team lead last year as a junior. This year, she's again the Mustangs' top swinger, and that showed especially late in Tuesday's match against WD. If there was a play to be made, Meyer was there to make it for the Hempstead 11-1-1. It's been that way for a while. Quote, I couldn't be more proud of her. Over the last 2 years that I've had the opportunity to coach her, she has transitioned into much more than just a heavy arm, said Mustangs coach Jackie Ahrensdorf said. She brings so much heart and soul to our team. The girls look to her when things are down. They look to her when things are up. She's a force to be reckoned with, end quote. Whenever Hempstead and WD get together, recent history shows it's going to be a hard-fought battle. Last year, these same teams opened with another five-set thriller at Moody, again with the Mustangs on the winning side. It was a rough start for the home team, though. The Bobcats, 10-6, ranked number 5 in Class 4A, used an 8-1 run to start the match, and in the midst of a 7-point swing for WD, starting Hempstead middle Leah Muller went down with an apparent shoulder injury. Muller was replaced by Emma Doughty and was later seen with her left shoulder in a brace for the rest of the match. The Bobcats also were missing a key starter in Meredith Bell, who hasn't played since WD's 4-set win over Dubuque Senior on September 3rd. Nonetheless, the Bobcats were able to cruise a 25-15 opening set win and looked poised to compete in a set 2 tied at 20 apiece. A kill by Ashley Glennon gave advantage to the Mustangs, and Morgan Hawkins served 4 straight to put her team up 24-20. Glennon then clinched set 2 with a kill on the outside and tied the match at a set apiece. Meyer then served Hempstead on a 10-0 run in set 3, the highlight of a 25-10 thrashing and a 2-1 lead in the match for the Mustangs. Quote, there's a lot we can learn. We can look at the game 3 and make sure that doesn't happen again, end quote, said WD coach Megan Sherman. Quote, but then we can look at games 4 and 5 and be proud that we battled for every point. We never gave up. We stayed confident in ourselves, so there's stuff to take from both ends, end quote. From set 4 on, both teams played like every last point was a crucial one. Neither team could stake more than a 3-point advantage in the fourth, with the Bobcats using a 3-point run to get to go to set point 24-23. Mira retied the set with a kill from the back row, but Libby Lansing answered with a kill of her own for the Mustangs, and WD clinched the fourth set on a Hempstead error 26-24. It was back and forth again to start the fifth, with WD clinching to a 12-11 lead. Becca Lockwood and Meyer had back-to-back kills, and Grace Dack had an ace to put the Mustangs to match point 14-12. 2 plays later, Mira reached kill number 1,000 on an outside pin swing that she crushed cross, glancing off a Bobcats player for the win. Glennon and Lockwood had 11 kills apiece. Hawkins finished with 46 assists, and Meyer had a match-high 26 digs. Maddie Moss finished with 42 assists, Maddie Harris added 19 kills, and Meg Bessler finished with 17 to lead WD. Now for the letters to the editor. We should learn from, not honor, sins of Bishop Loris. From Lucy Zeitman, Rivera Drive, Bellevue, Iowa. Concerning Bishop Loris and his ownership of Marie, a slave, recent discoveries of ledgers tell, quote, the rest of the story, quote, as Paul Harvey would say. In the 1800s, renting a slave to produce income was approved of even by a priest, apparently. Presently, it is not approved of, and Loris College had several choices it could have made, destroying the ledgers, hiding, lying, ignoring in the hopes no one would find out, or Loris could have chose to be proactive, tell the truth, uphold the trust that people have in Loris College. Showing integrity and character means sometimes having to make an unpopular decision. Isn't this what our country craves right now, instead of violence, secrecy, and lies that fuel the hate we are living? Bishop Loris' history will not disappear. His good works will live on. His sins should not be honored, but be learned from. Bishop Loris was a sinner, just like you and me. Loris College strives to appreciate, support, and be proud of the diversity on its campus. Removing the statue was the correct thing to do. Establishing a college scholarship in Marie's name shows the integrity and character of the Loris leadership. To hear alumni say, quote, I'm done with Loris, end quote, breaks my heart, and I am not a Loris alumni. Be proud of the integrity of the college you graduated from. There should be donors waiting in line to fund the scholarship to honor Murray. I will be. The next one, Pothuff would work hard for Dubuque County. From Joan Demmer of 9018 Lone Pine Road, Epworth, Iowa. I'm someone who votes for the person. I care about Dubuque County, and I want the best people representing us and working hard for all Dubuque County. Political party makes no difference to me. It just so happens Harley Pothuff is a Republican and I, a Democrat, am supporting him. He is the best person for the job and will work hard for all of Dubuque County. Two of our three supervisors seem to have personal agendas. They do not represent all of Dubuque County. They have created dysfunction many times, refusing to listen to the third supervisor or others. Because of this dysfunction, motions are made and passed, often by a vote of 2-1. Yes, they are all Democrats. One of them, Dave Baker, is up for re-election. But there is a choice. Harley Pothoff has one agenda, and that is for the people. I know him. He will listen and use common sense. If he doesn't have the answer, he will get it. He cares about the taxpayer and will be mindful of spending county tax dollars. He is respectful to all, including his colleagues. He is a good man and will be suited for the job of county supervisor. He will work hard for all of us. To the citizens of Dubuque County, vote for the man, not for the party, and please join me in voting for Harley Pothoff at the Dubuque County Supervisor. A guide to voting for people of faith, from Leon Sonskin of Oak Park Place, Dubuque. A church I attended has a newsletter which published a guide to use for the upcoming election. You may use it as a guidance, as do members of those who have an abiding faith in God. 1. First, don't vote for the basis of feelings. Raw, visceral emotions? Why? Untortured, unchecked feelings so often mislead us. Rather, act in an emotional manner. Voters are wisest to exercise political discernment, judgment, and reasoning. 2. Admittedly, our Lord does not say, vote for Biden or vote for Trump, but he, who people have always had to seek to trust and obey, does say enough in scripture that we can all discern some guidance for our voting. Prayers are powerful. 3. As both political parties have their platform, voters must compare the president's character, policies, leadership, potential, and accomplishments to those challengers' characters, policies, and leadership potential. Also, which of the two candidates will probably best serve the common good of the nation, its citizens, and taxpayers, and then vote accordingly. Laura's should rethink retaining college name, from Neil Weedkeko, Hamilton Drive, Duluth, Minnesota. As a parent of a Lourdes College student graduate, I believe that Lourdes Board of Regents should reconsider their decision to keep the college name. Bishop Matthias Lourdes enslaved a woman for 16 years from 1836 to 1852. Lourdes President Jim Collins wrote to the college community today that the Board of Regents believes that the educational experience beloved by our alumni, students, and faculty is not defined by the man, and therefore the college will retain its name. The college's name honors the man. Its continued use would always honor the man. The man's despicable actions should not be honored. The Board of Regents plans to start a scholarship in 2021 honoring the victim, Marie Louise. How do you honor a victim when the college is still named after her perpetrator? A quick search shows me that Lourdes College has functioned under 6 other names since its founding in 1839. What this tells me is that the college's mission is not defined by the college's name. The mission is bigger than the college's name. The Board of Regents did the right thing in removing the Lourdes statue from campus. The next step is removing the Lourdes name. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, September 16th. I'm your reader, Aaron. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.